All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another day of Saber Sims DFS Office Hours. Today is Monday, April 28th of 2025. And looking ahead here, we have a two-game NHL main slate tonight. We have a two-game NBA main slate. And then we have a 10-game MLB main slate. So plenty of DFS action coming at you today. For those of you who are new here, welcome. My name is Andrew, one of the coaches over here at SaberSim. This is a show where we go over how to use the SaberSim app, answer any and all DFS-related questions, get your questions in one of three ways here. First off, send us an email, support@sabersim.com. Second, post it live in the YouTube chat. Third way, post it in the Office Hours channel in our Discord server. If you're not in our Discord and want to get access to that channel, there is a link in the description of this video. You also get access to our similar channels, individual sport channels, and you get access to the rest of the SaberSim teams. Can't say enough good things about the Discord. But with that said, we do this show Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, and then we do this show on Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. Eastern. So tune in to any one of those shows and get your questions answered. It is Monday, so the I was going to say the birdie battle winners would be posted in Discord today, but we did not support the Zurich Classic. So we will support this upcoming weekend's golf tournament. So don't forget to get in on the action. But for more information on that, check out Discord. Or if you guys have questions, you can check Discord as well. All right. With that said, we do have a lot of questions here today. So let me get these all queued up. And even have some questions coming in live here as well. So it looks like it's going to be a pretty busy day, which is cool. A lot of questions on a Monday, which is always great. Got a build review request from Dummy. I will log that after. But I think we have all the questions in the queue at the moment. So we're just going to start from the top down and get going from there. So first question today, this one actually came in from support. Hello, when there is an injured slash out player in your built lineups, I understand we should do a quick swap and then upload those new lineups to lock them in. But do you recommend rebuilding the lineups if we have time as well? Or does the quick swap feature automatically reanalyze and rebuild all the lineups with the players ruled out? Okay, good question. So we have two swap tools in the app, okay? The first one is the quick swap tool, which is this lightning bolt over here. Basically what it does, it looks in your projections it looks in your CSV, it looks in the contest tab of your exposures. And if any of the players there have a zero projection, it lights up. So in this case, a zero projection indicates to the builder, hey, there is an out player in your lineups. That is when the lightning bolt will light up red, and then it will tell you, hey, you know, you need to, you know, remove this player from your lineup, or else, you know, you're probably going to end up with a zero. Oh, actually, I said it was a 10-game slate. That's actually tomorrow. Looks like we have a 6-game MLB main slate today. So my bad on that one. But anyways, getting back to this. So the reason we recommend using the red lightning bolt is because it's very fast and it's very efficient, okay? It does not take very much time. What it does is it just takes all of the players who have a zero player or players, if there's more than one, and then it just one for one swaps them with the best projected player underneath the salary that you have remaining on a per lineup basis, okay? So it is just one for one going to swap. The reason this is good is because you can quickly get out players out of your lineup, and then you get players with a projection into your lineups, okay? We're actually working on some really cool updates to quick swap and things like that, but quick swap in the form that probably most people are familiar with will just get you projected players who are actually going to play. That is always going to be better than having a zero in your lineup. At least those players have opportunities to get fantasy points, okay? After doing that, because that is the safest and quickest thing you can do, then we recommend running a late swap build. Now, late swaps take a little bit longer, which is why we recommend the quick swap first. You'd be like, hey, you know, do a quick swap, at least get these players out that are get the players that are out of your lineups, get players that are in into your lineups, and then re-optimize them, right? And then get back to all the correlative factors, the stacking, your rules, any filters, any exposures you wanted, right? Let's do that secondarily, right? So that's kind of the workflow that we recommend. Quick swap first, then late swap. Quick swap, just to be clear in regards to the question, is not rebuilding all of your lineups. Late swap is. So when you say, do you recommend rebuilding lineups if we have time as well? Yes, absolutely. We do recommend that. Quick swap is not reanalyzing and rebuilding lineups. That is not true. So quick swap first, then late swap. And then what I normally recommend is carrying over your settings in late swap. So what that looks like, if we go over to our late swap tutorial. So when we get to like, when you go into late swap, you'll hit the late swap button and then you'll get like a, there's like a settings. It looks like, I'll show you what it looks like. Late swap looks like this now. You see how the build lineups button has like a little gear icon on it? Late swap looks the same way. When you click this gear icon, when you click that gear icon, you're going to get like this pop-up here, okay? And let's go back real quick. And then that can be found in the contest tab. So like you would be in the contest tab. Over here in the lineup section, you would have a button that says late swap. And then it would have a gear icon on it. And then you'll get this pop-up. Now the settings section down here allows you to carry over any exposure adjustments, player pool adjustments, rules, filters, etc. And it'll be default automatically. That's like the primary setting, is just like brand new build. But if you want to carry over your stuff, you just click this drop down and then you switch it to whatever your last build's name was, which the regular name is typically build one. So that's what you'll see most often there. So if you want to carry anything over, I would do so, but then I would finish running your late swap and then replace the quick swap lineups with the late swapped lineups, right? So quick swap first, submit lineups, go into SaberSim, late swap, submit the late swap lineups. The late swap lineups are going to be better than the quick swap lineups would be. But good clarification question for sure. So hope that provided some clarity. All right. Next question. What is the difference between how the builder builds my lineups and when it is building the various field lineups? Okay, another good question. So the field lineups, notice like how we have all these different buckets, right? So we created all these buckets by backtesting contests. We basically backtested contests by dollar amount. We backtested contests by entry limit, like how many entries you could put. Can you put single? Can you put three? Can you put 20? Can you put 150, right? And then we found similarities between all the contests, grouped contests together, and effectively created kind of like parameters for like, hey, we think that based on our backtesting, this contest plays kind of this way. These other contests play that way. That leads to the differences in the field lineups. The other thing is that I'm almost positive we use optimizer mode for our field lineups. So the field lineups have a lot more built-in parameters based on stakes and based on entry limit than your regular lineups do, right? Your regular lineups do not have these parameters. And we are also using sim mode. So those are the biggest differences there. A lot of backtesting goes into creating the field lineups. And then we do update that backtesting. Like I think recently we used to have a winner take all bucket, but then we were testing and we're like, you know what? We don't really think this winner take all bucket is like all that useful. Let's remove it. And then let's switch satellites to like one of these other options. So our team is like, always, you know, around and paying attention to those kind of things. So we're very happy with the state of the field lineups at the moment. All right. Keeping it rolling. Apologies in advance. This is a long one. No worries. I've been a profitable cash game player for over a year now using a traditional optimizer. I understand GPP strategy and recently have been branching out into more GPP play. And I've even taken down a quarter jukebox or two. I've watched a lot of your content and understand the Saber system profit plan. All of that being said, a lot of your content is geared toward the ultimate plan, and I'm not quite there yet bankroll-wise to commit the $300 a month. I fully see the advantages that SaberSim provides for GPP play over traditional optimizer, but I'm struggling with how to best use the standard plan without contest sim. So how would you recommend best utilizing the standard plan to build a bankroll? And when would you say it would be time to upgrade to the ultimate plan? How much volume would you need to make to play to make it worth it? Okay, good question. So, you know, for me, right, there's a couple of key differences between standard and ultimate, right? So say that again. On standard, you could build 500. On ultimate, you could build 5,000, right? That's primary number one difference. Number two difference is that on standard, your primary sorting metric is Saber score. On ultimate, your primary sorting metric is the contest sim ROI, okay? There's a lot of other like bells and whistles, like nice to have things, you know, uploading projections, downloading projections, custom metrics, you know, this, that, and the other, right? But in a simple version of it, you know, I think those are like the two kind of highlights that you got to be aware of between the two. Now, as far as like workflow goes, I don't think your workflow is actually that different because, you know, a lot of your steps are the same, right? You come in, you set up you have your number of lineups, you have your min-max salary, you can change these if you want. You have your filters, you have your rules if you want, right? All of these are like at your disposal. You make your two adjustments to projections and you click build, right? You could do this on either plan, okay? Now, the big difference is how you sort the lineups, right? Building the lineups is actually the same. There's no difference in building the lineups between standard and ultimate. We are using the same sim database. We are randomly sampling the sims the same way. The only difference is the ultimate plan gets more lineups to sample and rank and fill from, where on standard you have less. Okay. So the process is the same, but the quantity you receive is different. All right. So that's the one difference here, but same sim process. And then the second thing is that when you get into the post build, you would have Saber score, right? Other difference is that you would have ROI. So the only difference is those are the two differences that I'm pointing out, right? Okay, the number of lineups and then your primary sorting metric, okay? This is taking the same, in this case, 500 lineups and just sorting them differently. When Saber score, you're sorting them another way, right? So like if we use large slate 10K to 50K Saber score, and like for instance, we go and we look at our pitchers, right? Okay, well with Saber score, our top, at ROI, our chart pitchers are May and Blanco. So Blanco went from like 50, 55% down to 35. And then now he's tied with May as our highest. So it seemed like Saber score was actually a little bit higher leverage here on Blanco and Warren and then May. And then ROI was like a little bit different. So there's definitely going to be some similarities here. And the reason for that, right, is that we talked about this before, is that Saber score was created using contest sims, right? We used contest sims to backtest contests and figure out, hey, what sliders over the long run produce the best results based on slate size, right? And then we group more contests under a single umbrella with Saber score, right? We group all contests with entries 10K to 50K. We don't treat 15,000 different from 45,000. We don't treat $1 different from $50, right? Those are like the grouping, the umbrella part of Saber score. That's why Saber score is a little bit more of like the 80-20 of contest sims, where contest sims are like as specific as you can be. But all else aside, take away the lineup difference, take away that zero, and then take away the extra step of running and sorting by your contest sim, all other aspects of the process are the same. Now, where I think that you can add the most value to your process and help yourself to become a winning player is honestly not even in this section. It's, in my opinion, it's actually in contest flashback. Now, you can go, you know, to past slates, review your results in your contest, and figure out what are the best players in my contest doing and how do their lineups look different from mine, right? And I think that you, on any plan, well, first off, contest flashback is available on any plan. And then from there, you can make adjustments to your own process that kind of mimic those better lineups. You can even look at contests you don't play. You can look at the $15, 150 max. And you can just say, hey, you know, these lineup characteristics, portfolio characteristics are what the best players in the lobby are doing. I'm going to try and move my process closer to that. For instance, something I saw recently reviewing lineups was that a top sim ROIer had a batter leverage that was like plus or minus 10% from a player's ownership. Now, what that means is that they weren't taking too big of a stand on any one single batter because they understood that batters are high variance just in and of themselves based on the way that they play, right? And you could pull up any batter and, you know, you'd probably get a pretty good idea of that based on how their range of outcomes looks, right? Ozzie Albies, most common outcome is 0 points 21% of the time. One out of five times in our sims for this game is going to score 0 points, right? Less than 5 points is 20%. So 41% of the time, this player is scoring less than 5 points, even though his average is 9.1, you know, but he does have, you know, some amount of the time he scores 35 points, you know, mid 30s, high 20s, you know, at a much lower rate, but it's these small percentage outcomes that really pull his projection higher than what you might think based on his most likely outcomes. Okay. So this tells you batters are high variance. So, you know, that leverage makes a lot of sense, right? Batters are really high variance. It's really hard to know what batter is going to have a great day. Let me have some leverage. Let me not have too much on any of these guys and take shots elsewhere, maybe on pitchers, you know, maybe on like, maybe I'm going to focus on my stack types. Maybe I'm focused on my team stacks, things like that, right? So that's just one idea from something I saw from a top sim ROI player. You can do that even on standard plan, right? You can do that on any plan. So I think that, you know, really, really diving deep in contest flashback and studying winning players is a phenomenal thing that you can do to help draw up a process that can work even if you don't have access to contest sims. So that's what I'd be thinking about. That's what I would be doing. But all in all, those are like, you know, two primary differences between the two different subscription levels. As far as like when to upgrade, you know, it always kind of depends on, I think this is how I'll talk to tell some people, like give them an analogy. You know, I think that you should start on starter, right? That's what it's called. It's called DFS starter. If you never played DFS before, you know, probably a good thing to go try starter and get a feel for it. Create a winning process on starter. And then once you have a winning process, once you start to, you know, bring in some money, then you're like, okay, I have enough extra bankroll here that I think it's worth it to upgrade to ultimate. You know, that could be at like very, very different points for different people. So it's hard to say. But the point is that you don't want to upgrade your subscription and the cost of the subscription feels like a stretch. The cost of the subscription feels like it is diluting your enjoyment of playing DFS and of using the tool because you're like, oh my God, if I don't win $300 by the end of the month, I'm going to have to cancel. I'm going to have to downgrade. You know, if you're in that boat, then you're probably upgrading too soon. You should probably, you know, go back to starter and stay there for a while. But, you know, if you can get a winning process and get these aspects correct, then you upgrade. And then the other important part is don't throw out everything you've been doing that's helping you win. You need to figure out, okay, well, how do I take what I've been doing that's working and combine it with these upgraded tools and just continue to elevate my game. I've seen users do this, like when we first started Contest Sims, like, hey, I used to be a winning player and then Contest Sims got released and I switched and now I'm losing. It's like, well, if you were winning, you shouldn't throw away everything you've been doing just because this, you know, new shiny feature like got released. You gotta figure out how to combine it with what is already working. And sometimes that process can be slow, right? Sometimes you want to play, you know, I know we say like, hey, play like 2.5 to 5% of your bankroll. Start lower than that, right? Start with like 1%. You know, start playing one lineup. You know, Jordan used to talk about this like a lot when he would do office hours. He would say, you know, when you're on a downswing, like scale your playback and just say, hey, today I'm going to build one lineup and I'm going to build one really good lineup. And then you go and you look in flashback and you're like, hey, how did this lineup do? Okay, this was a good lineup, right? Now I'm going to try and build three good lineups. Now I'm going to try and build 10 good lineups, and you scale your way back to the volume that you want to play at. But you start with like, can I build one good lineup? And then you just iterate on that process until you get back to the size and scale that you actually want to be at. So I always like that idea. Definitely helps me out from time to time. Something that I'll do if you know, really struggling. So hope that helps. You know, if there's any follow-up, let me know. But those are like the major aspects that I felt were like important to cover here. All right, where were we? Okay, we're on Big J's question. Big J said, I need help with flashback. Doing flashbacks for a DK slate is super simple, but it doesn't work the same for FanDuel. I looked through the help section and couldn't find any help for FanDuel. Specifically, when I click on a FanDuel contest, none of the lineups load for the users I went against. Okay, so sorry if this wasn't clear, but we do not have contest flashback for FanDuel. And the reason for it is that DraftKings allows us to download their contest data into a CSV, and then we use that data to show all of the lineups and results and run the post-contest sim in the app. FanDuel does not allow us to download their contest data, unfortunately. So we do not have the same capability to provide the same tools and show the lineups and run the post-contest sims on FanDuel as we can on DraftKings. So right now, contest flashback is not available for FanDuel. All right, keeping it rolling. When building lineups on the standard plan and doing very minimal adjustments post-build, only having a 500 lineup pool, is there worry for lineup duplication? Okay, so you should think about lineup duplication on a more of a sport and slate type kind of framework or like mindset. So it's not like, hey, you know, I'm playing baseball, I only have 500 lineups, is it more likely I'm going to duplicate? The answer is no, right? But if you're playing NFL Showdown and you have 500 lineups, the answer is yes, but it's not because of the number of lineups you have. It's because of the slate type you're playing, right? So slate type, you know, things like NASCAR, things like MMA, NFL Showdown, NBA Showdown, basically sports where the player pool is very, very small. You know, MMA, 13 fights, that's 26 fighters. NASCAR is 40 or less drivers. I really don't know how many football players, like viable options there are, but NBA, right? Five starters and like five bench players, you know, 20 players maybe in the postseason, even less, right? Because players are playing like super high minutes. Lakers, a great example, you know, yesterday or day before where they had five players play the entire second half, right? So all of those, a lot of like duplication comes down to is how many, you know, players are in the player pool. And then, you know, you kind of have like a little bit of like a feel for the slate. Golf is like a six player format, right? You're like, okay, golf's like six players. And MMA is like six players, NASCAR is six players, but like golf can have, you know, 150 golfers And so their player pool is much bigger. So then you need to worry about duplication less. The way I always tell if duplication is important, or if the way you can tell if you don't know, is go back to a past slate and look. We've done this. Like, hey, you know, I'm going to play MLB Showdown today. You know, I'm really not sure if MLB Showdown has a lot of duplication. Okay, well, then I just go back to yesterday's slate. I look at the highest sim ROI players and the same contest that I'm playing today. Maybe I'm playing the $1 20 max. Okay, let's go look at the $1 20 max yesterday. Let's go and look at a contest of similar size that may be a different dollar value. That's okay, right? Same size contests are going to kind of play the same way as well. So when you do that, you get an idea of like, is duplication important or not? But being on the standard plan versus being on ultimate is not going to impact duplication, is the important part to get across here. It's always going to be sport and slate type dependent. All right, next question. During late swap, SaberSim uses the actual parts of lineups that are known about the field. What does it do for the rest of the lineups, which aren't known yet? You can't use the pre-built field lineups anymore. Good question. So think about it like this. Let's say that, you know, we are projecting Aaron Judge to be, you know, 15% owned, and we're projecting Adley Rutschman to be, you know, 10% owned, right? Something like that. And then let's say that Judge comes in, you know, twice as high, right? Judge comes in at like 30. Rutschman comes in like less, like half. He comes in at like 5%. Well, now it's kind of like shifted up the ownership, right? So the way I look at it is like ownership is like a puzzle. And at every lock time, pieces of the puzzle are becoming visible. So what happens here is like, okay, we got X pieces of the puzzle and every player is a piece of the puzzle. We give those puzzle pieces to SaberSim saying, hey, you know, I know you thought the puzzle was going to look like this pre-slate. This is what the puzzle actually looks like. Part of it. Now resolve the puzzle, refinish the puzzle. And then if there is more ownership used or taken up than we thought, then we take ownership away from players whose games haven't started. When there is more ownership available, we spread out the ownership to players whose games haven't started, right? So ownership gets rebuilt for all of the players whose games have not started as the live fields get updated with actual ownership. So that is what is happening. Those players are getting re-projected as live ownership comes in. All right. This one looks like it's from Nika. Nika said, what is the best way to utilize flashback? What is valuable to take away? Yeah, I mean, we were just having like a really good discussion about that, right? So for me, right, if like we go back to like yesterday, for instance, okay, let's go back to yesterday's baseball slate. And let's say, you know, I want to go and I want to look at like the large field, you know, 150 max today. Okay, we go to contests. And it looks like that was the bat flip, $18, 150 max. And I just want to go and look at like some of the best players in the lobby, right? Okay. So I go over to users. I filter entries to 150. I sort by sim ROI. So it looks like Z Roth was the highest sim ROI player. I see this name like a ton. Leaderboard will filter down here. I could open up the projections and look at his exposures. We'll get to that, right? But then maybe I just want to look at like some high-level stuff. So average salary is like 49.3. I could compare this with like other users here. You know, where kind of is everybody? We see a little bit of a range. We see 49.3. We see 50K. We see 48.9. You know, users are spreading it out a little bit here, but kind of staying like above 48.5, you know? So like, I think the default salary is like 48,000. Maybe I bump that up a little bit. You know, maybe I'm like, hey, I want to do, you know, 48.7, right? We've just taken away something from flashback. And we've noticed that the highest salary sim ROI lineups are usually above 49K. There's one outlier here that's below. So then maybe I set my minimum to 49K. That is a simple takeaway that we could do here to help our lineups. Okay. And then the other thing is that we see like sim average scores for 97, 94, 99, 92, 94. So like there's kind of a big range here, right? We see 91 to 99. So that tells us like, hey, you know, you can kind of get wide with your projection here, and we don't need to like value projection so significantly. That does make sense in like a high correlation sport like MLB. So we've determined that like salary, we could probably raise from the default. Projection matters, but doesn't matter so much. There's like a really big range here. And then we go and look at Z-Ross lineups, right? Okay. Well, what kind of stacks did he primarily use? All right. So he does allow some three stacks, even some two stacks in here, right? Let me remove my face. So I'll even allow some two stacks. There is, you know, two lineups out of the 150 that are a 2-2-2 or 2-2-2-2. You know, this is kind of like the idea I talk about where it's like, you know, the odds of you winning this contest are, you know, less than 1% if you have lineups, stack types that are coming up, you know, 1% of the time. Well, the odds of that lineup stack being good are like even a little bit higher than your chances of winning the contest. Like, why not let some of those come in as the builder sees fit? You know, I'm not saying that like their thought process here, but it is interesting to see some two stacks even from the top sim ROI player here. And it's only two out of 150, but it is interesting because most people might just set a rule. Most people might just X those stacks out and not even consider them. So here, you know, maybe I'm going to be willing to leave all stack types checked, maybe not use a stacking rule that I might otherwise use regularly based on what I'm seeing here from this user, right? Like, this is our second takeaway just studying this, right? Okay. You know, most of their stacks are still fours and fives, you know, all their 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, seven of their top eight stack types are all a four stack or bigger. So, you know, playing mostly the good stacks, right? But letting some of those smaller ones sneak in there. So you could just look in your stacks like, hey, you know, am I mostly seeing fours and fives, right? You run your build, you go to stack exposures, you sort by exposure. Like, hey, am I mostly seeing fours and fives at the top? Maybe I'm seeing some three stacks up here, okay? Maybe I don't want to play that many three stacks, right? Like, that is another takeaway that you can make, is that I'm okay playing some three stacks, but I definitely don't want them to be like the highest leverage or like my most exposed stack, right? Okay, another takeaway right there. We come in here, you know, okay, how are they handling projected runs, right? We sort by runs. They're getting to some, like they have double digit exposure to like all of the top stacks, taking a big stand on like a team kind of in the middle. And then they're even getting some exposure to like some lower exposed stacks as well, right? So stack exposure looks very, very spread out here. Okay. And then, you know, we can look at their pitchers, right? Okay. I like to sort by actual own. Like, hey, how did they handle the highest owned pitchers? Okay. It looks like they got over the field on Joe Ryan, on Scooble. They didn't get too weird with any of these lower projected pitchers. So pretty kind of straight up with pitchers. We can even look at like value, right? The highest value pitchers are like still those highest owned ones, kind of normal here. I don't see anything too weird. Like, I'm looking at this leverage column, you know, plus or minus, nothing in the double digits except for those two high value pitchers, high owned pitchers they got over on. And then we go to batters. And they have some double digit exposures. Like, we saw like the 42% Houston. Okay, we can expect some high ownership, some high exposure to them, some high leverage. They clearly took a stand on them. But other than that, you know, nothing too crazy. So I think I learned more from like the stacks. I think I learned a little bit more from the pitchers here about, you know, maybe I need to focus on like the high value pitchers and then, you know, let the builder have its way with like some of the lower value pitchers. Maybe I need to rethink my willingness to play all types of stacks. Maybe I need to adjust my minimum salary, right? Those are all things you can take away from Flashback. And then you could do this process, do it for more than one player, right? Okay, hey, too easy here was the third highest sim ROI-er yet they actually won, right? They turned approximately $25,000 profit. Not only are you studying a high sim ROI player, you're studying somebody who came in probably second place in this contest. So now you're studying, you know, somebody whose lineups actually won money too, right? Go look at their lineups. Do this for three players. Do this for five players. Do this for players you know, right? So there's a bunch of different ways you could, you know, break this up this way and that way. But that is how I would be using Flashback to learn and to make adjustments to my own process. And not only does this, you know, serve like Nika's question, this serves the previous question of like building winning processes on the standard plan. Everything we just talked about can be applied, and you don't need to use contest sims to do so. So that is what I would be, you know, doing on day-to-day basis, week-to-week basis. Maybe you study on Wednesdays, maybe you study on Mondays and use that process for the rest of the week. And then you come back next Monday and, you know, you kind of batch your reviews, or you just see how things are looking this week, right? So that's what I would be doing here, trying to utilize Flashback in multiple different ways. All right. A lot of good questions today. I think we're all caught up here in both the Discord and the different chats here. Appreciate you guys tuning in. I will be back tomorrow, 4 p.m. Eastern, for our next show. So until then, everybody, take care. Good luck. Thanks. Bye.